Hello, my friends. Welcome back to the Hello Tomorrow podcast, where we create clarity from chaos so we can get excited about tomorrow in 15 minutes or less. In the next few minutes, we're going to tackle some deep stuff from this last week and do our best to make sense of what's coming next. Every week is a strange week in the U.S. right now, but this last week was particularly crazy because last week, the U.S. government shut down. Is that a thing that should be able to happen? Probably not, but we'll have to talk about that another day because right now it can, and it did. On October 1st, 2025, funding lapsed when Congress couldn't pass appropriations legislation, which is a fancy way of saying a bill that funds things. As of today, October 7th, there's still no deal, making this the fourth longest shutdown since we started doing this peculiar dance in 1980, which was the year before I was born. If you're curious, Trump has the dubious honor of presiding over 27% of all government shutdowns, 3 out of 11. Now, unless you measure by days shutdown, in which case his number is actually 49% and counting. Anyway, personally, I'm more interested in other numbers, like how many people are impacted by a shutdown like this. As of today, the total furloughed, temporarily laid off, appears to be around 620,000. But this number is likely to be climbing quickly, be higher already, but agencies are utilizing things like carryover funds from last year to temporarily keep people working. Now, over 1 million government employees are currently working without pay because they're classified as essential. Now, this number is so huge because it includes military personnel. And the White House is threatening to not give these folks back pay. And there are also hundreds of thousands of federal contractors who aren't employees, who may not be eligible for back pay at all. So if you were wondering, this isn't anything resembling a vacation for federal employees, y'all. Though God knows they need it. Quite opposite, in fact. How many weeks can you go without a paycheck? Most of us, not very many. What else does a shutdown do? Well, the economy takes a real hit. Estimates range from $7 billion to $15 billion in GDP lost every week of shutdown. So even a short standoff burns billions. Now, none of this is detached bureaucracy drama, of course. This is impacting people, real people, just like you and me, who have families to care for, rent to pay, food to buy. It's also paralyzing the public infrastructure we all count on. Permits and research and cybersecurity and flights and many more essential things. Now, speaking of flights, here's another warning signal flashing red. According to CNN just this morning, the shutdown's already starting to strain air travel, with delays being reported yesterday in Burbank, Phoenix, and my hometown, Denver. Now, if you recall, air travel was the falling domino that ended the longest government shutdown on record back in Trump's first term. That one stretched 35 days from December 2018 to January 2019. And it finally broke because 10 air traffic controllers stayed home, disrupting air traffic across the country. Pretty powerful what 10 essential workers can do. Now, this specific part of the shutdown hits me and many of my speaker friends personally. Of course, we rely on our air traffic infrastructure to do our jobs. I have to be in Milwaukee next week to give a talk. I'm now wondering if I need to move my flight earlier to make sure I get there in time. But beyond my travel, this shutdown makes me think of all the other travelers, people going on a vacation they've been planning for the last 2 years, people who are expected at reunions, people traveling to see sick or dying relatives. Like, we all rely on this particular structure so we can live lives that are worth living. Air traffic control is what economists call a safety critical infrastructure. Like so many systems, it's completely invisible until it isn't. As the CNN article put it, a 24/7, 365 days a year safety critical operation, which supports 5.2% of national gross domestic product, should never experience a lapse in appropriations. Yeah, exactly. So both our personal safety and a big chunk of our economy is now dependent on people who are working without pay. That's not just political dysfunction or economic ineptitude. It's also moral insanity. But it perfectly illustrates a larger point. When our governmental systems are designed more around short-term fighting instead of long-term stability, they will eventually fail in ways we all feel. At the airport, in the grocery store, at the hospital, everywhere. Now, meanwhile, the private sector is building tomorrow. While the public sector is flinching hard, the AI build-out is soaring. McKinsey estimates globally, we're going to see $6.7 trillion in data center capital expenditure happening in the next 5 years, with $5 trillion of that tied to AI-intensive workloads. We've got $500 billion committed to OpenAI's Stargate project. Citigroup is projecting that U.S.-based big tech companies alone will spend almost $3 trillion on AI-related infrastructure by 2029. These numbers are crazy. They make our heads spin. And if you're not firmly in the tech nerd category, you might be wondering what all this spending is for anyway. Think of this as building the technological substrate of the next era. It's a foundation of compute, power, cooling, and networking. It's our capacity to process huge amounts of data, basically. Right now, we aren't able to process as much data as we think we want or need to. So we're building the ability to process more, lots more. Now, while this is admittedly exciting from a technological perspective, the juxtaposition of this spending spree against the backdrop of a complete shutdown of the most powerful government in the world just feels bizarre. Put simply, our government can't pass a budget while companies are committing trillions to build the tomorrow they want. There are a lot of headlines floating around right now, but that contrast is my headline for the week. Now, let me be extra clear. This is not government bad, private sector good. This isn't a morality contest where one side gets to be the hero. I want you to see that both systems are failing us because both are built on extraction. The public sector is trapped in a lack of vision and short-term political cycles that completely destroy long-term investments in pretty much anything. And it's even making short-term cooperation feel like a non-starter. Our current public sphere feels completely incapable of caring for or even supporting most of us. Now, the private sector has a longer vision, but it's bound to quarterly returns and shareholder primacy, which means it will largely be at odds with long-term human flourishing and planetary resilience. Our current private sphere feels deeply predatory and incentivized to prioritize profits over well-being. So the story isn't public bad, private good, or private bad, public good. It's two extractive operating systems that were never actually designed to regenerate the resources we want and actually depend on. Things like human energy, ecological balance, social trust. These are things that a good life is made of, and neither of our current systems are supporting them. So what's the alternative? I believe we need a rebirth of the commons. Now, historically, the commons meant the things we all shared. Grazing lands for our animals, waterways, forests, irrigation systems, and so on. It's the living infrastructure that makes survival possible. They weren't owned by anyone because they belonged to everyone. And for centuries, local communities figured out how to steward them together. Now, then came the myth of the tragedy of the commons. This is a phrase you might be more familiar with than just to the commons. This is the idea that shared resources will always be overused and destroyed because people are selfish. But that story was never based on real evidence. It was an economic parable written by a biologist named Garrett Hardin in 1968, but it became a justification for privatizing almost everything. Decades later, Nobel laureate Eleanor Ostrom proved Hardin wrong through meticulous fieldwork from irrigation systems in Nepal to fisheries in Turkey. She showed that communities can manage and share resources sustainably when they have clear boundaries, mutual trust, agreed upon rules for use and replenishment. In other words, when the people actually talk to each other. Which brings us to now. Because in 2025, the commons isn't just about land or water anymore, is it? It's the internet, the atmosphere, the power grid, the public health system, the digital knowledge base we all draw from. It's even the attention economy, right? Like the collective pool of human focus that's being incessantly mined and monetized by algorithms. Like every one of our shared spaces is being enclosed and exploited by systems designed to extract out of them as much value as possible, as fast as possible. So here's where the common good comes in. This is an even deeper operating principle that goes all the way back to Aristotle and Aquinas. They argued that the purpose of governance isn't to protect private wealth or secure short-term wins, but to cultivate the conditions under which everyone can thrive. It's not socialism or capitalism. It's just civilization. Citizens, people like you and me, trying to live a good life. We've lost that frame. Public life has been captured by partisan trench warfare. Private life has been hijacked by shareholder value. And somewhere in between, the idea of common stewardship has evaporated. This is why we feel so unmoored. Because the operating system we're running on, right, the code that organizes our priorities, no longer matches what life on this planet actually requires. Something like the commons is the missing operating system. It's the upgrade we desperately need, from ownership to stewardship, from extraction to regeneration, from competition to collaboration. Right? That feels right, doesn't it? Now, the other day, when I was doom scrolling on Instagram, yes, the vortex still pulls me in occasionally, I saw a post that I can't get out of my brain. Here's the line that won't leave my head. If humans need it to stay alive, it should not be for profit. I invite you to sit with that. I have been. Is it true? If it is, then a lot of our world is pretty upside down. Food, energy, healthcare, housing, knowledge, nearly all of our survival systems are structured as profit centers, especially here in the US. But what if we treated core survival infrastructure as commons instead of commodities? Yes, okay, the shutdown. It is a policy failure, but symbolically, I think it's more. I think it's a signal that extractive governance is hitting its wall. A system optimized for short-term battles can't meet long-term needs. So maybe a rupture was inevitable. But ruptures are dangerous. Vacuums can empower the worst actors if the good rebels don't stand up and do something. Collapse without vision empowers the worst actors. So the assignment for those of us who care about tomorrow is clear. Carry the vision. Keep your eyes on the future you actually want and build towards it. What can you do? Well, can you help sketch blueprints for commons-based systems? Can you help build technology that's in the common interest? Can you invest in a big or small way in the common infrastructure of life? Can you tell stories that make regenerative futures feel obvious and exciting? And if you're too tired for any of that today, that's okay. I get it. If that's the case, perhaps you can just spread this message to one person you think needs to hear it. Just click share, send, and say, this is what I want to help build. I don't know exactly how, but this is what I want us to do. Because while the government shuts down, tomorrow is still being built. The first question is, by who and for what? But the next question is, what can I do to help build something better? Thanks for listening. See you next week.